This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group and Cameron Luthy. Cameron is a senior budget analyst from Bloomberg Government. Guys, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Roger.
Morning.
Okay, and so...
Hey, it's like San Diego weather today. You know that.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous outside, so it's a great day.
Yeah. It's always a great day every day that you wake up, right? Mm-hmm. So, guys, and I don't know if it's such a great year, but that's what we're going to talk about a little bit, about the market outlook going into the fourth quarter, sequestration, what's it meant for the federal government, what's it mean, what's it meant for contractors, and what does it mean from a strategic perspective moving forward. And so, Cameron, I just want to turn it over to you first, and you let's talk a little bit, or can you summarize where we are right now, what's sort of transpired over the first three quarters of the government's fiscal year?
Sure. You had the entertaining phenomenon of the specter of sequester hanging over the federal government spending patterns in the first quarter. And under the law, the sequester was supposed to come into play on January, at the beginning of the year, the calendar year. The first quarter, though, saw varying patterns of behavior on the part of federal agencies. And as we were talking about earlier, the Defense Department went on a spending spree in the first quarter, thinking that sequester would go away. Some other agencies followed that pattern. Others were more moderated their behavior while they were waiting to see what would happen. Of course, the CR was holding back some spending. New starts are limited, of course, under a CR. So second quarter, they began to, you had the fiscal cliff deal at the beginning of January. Second quarter, the sequester looked like it was really going to happen in March, and DOD, among other agencies, put the brakes on spending in the second quarter. And that was a bit of a shock to the system. So you can see this has been a bumpy ride this year. Third quarter, you know, sequester went into effect. The agencies got their marks. They were told this is how much money you don't have, and they had to move ahead. And for some, it took a little longer to straighten it out because they had to come back to Congress with their spending plans for what they would actually do with what they had left. But spending began to pick up in the third quarter. But the basic pattern that we're seeing is similar in net effect, in that agencies still have a lot of money to put on contract in the fourth quarter.
And Bill, what does that sort of, you know, from your perspective, what does that mean to the procurement system?
Yeah, I think when you look at it both from a government contracting viewpoint, into the remarks that Cameron, or the area Cameron just covered, Q1 through really Q3 and a half is kind of where we are, I guess, or close to it. The the government's had to make adjustments internally as far as, from a contracting standpoint, and you have your procurement acquisition lead times, your PALTs out there, and how do you plan for that? And I think with a lot of oversight and criticism that I think oversight, government has a responsibility to have oversight of the acquisition community. But on one hand, it's kind of hard to measure the success of an acquisition community when they really don't know what's going to occur as far as being able to plan for contracts. And so this is, Cameron hit the nail on the head here. This has really been an up and down year, but it's up and down with very little knowledge of what's going to be coming forward from a contracting standpoint. And then so that's inside government. Outside government, the other and the other leg on the stool, and we have industry, then they're trying to react to that. And from a strategic planning standpoint, Roger, you have an obligation to your shareholders and to investors and so forth. And also obviously to your employees as a company, how do I manage moving forward, how to run the company. And that's really been a challenge for on both sides, but from an industry standpoint, in answer to your question, I just left coffee earlier this morning and actually wrote the notes on the back of someone's resume who got laid off and as a result of sequestration. And in the industry, the person was associated with was training. And ironically, I've talked to a couple companies who are associated with training, and one, without giving the name of the companies, obviously, but they're both of them, their business this year is off over 50%. And I find that interesting when you hear a lot of government officials indicate that training is a key part of any successful government organization. But on the other end, where the results are, the real results, I mean, it sounds good, I guess, when you're talking to your employees in an auditorium, hey, training's number one for us. You know, we're committed. We want to have the government be the best place to work, and we want to attract the best and brightest. But when you really look behind that, you know, you look at the industry, that industry has been devastated, and it has a lot of infrastructure that it has set up over the years to respond and to deliver the accreditations that, various government employment series have, like the 1102. But when you look at the actual spend or the actual results of what is occurring here, you know, and as I said earlier, both of these companies have had over a 50% drop in business. And so that's hard to maintain. And I think, I don't know if you're going to get into LPTA or going to get into strategic sourcing, but I think there is somewhat of a net result on what's happened to training, where the government says they're going to do something and we're not seeing that occur. And then we can talk about the other two if we have time today.
Okay. Well, that's, we'll definitely get to those other two topics. And Cameron, in terms of those kind of cuts with the things that, investments in people like training and that sort of thing, where is the pain, across the federal enterprise? Are you seeing it in terms of reductions?
So, the impact on the contractor community is, you really have to look sector by sector, as Bill illustrated. There are certain sectors where you have to also look short term and medium term and long term. For example, if you look at the hardware, the defense contractors, the original equipment manufacturers, the big five, right? Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman. In the short term, if you look at the way sequester's been implemented, and you look at their financial position, and you look at their back orders, they're doing fine. Yeah, there have been some layoffs here and there.
Right, and there was an article in the Post last week saying that.
Their profits are good, their earnings, their revenue stream is good. They've got huge funded backlog in those companies. So think about this way. Sequester so far has been a one-year phenomenon, which cut in many cases in the procurement line items, old money. It cut prior year balances, not new money in many cases, probably on a 2-to-1 basis. About 2/3 of the cuts came out of prior year money, which we suspect is because they probably wouldn't have been able to obligate the funds before they expired anyway.
Right.
So
take advantage of that.
And
right?
You're talking about multi-year programs, 20-year acquisition programs. So the pain in some ways is spread out over time for these big original equipment manufacturers. So the impact of sequester on them is different from a company in the service sector, where maybe you have staff augmentation contract with a FEMA or maybe in the intelligence community. Well, the agency can say, the customer can say to the vendor, well, we're going to do a mod. We're going to modify the contract. We're going to cut you back by 10% of your seats. Easy, right? For the government. Painful for the contractor. So the service sector has probably felt more of the immediate pain than the goods sector when it comes to federal contracting. There are various aspects of this that the three of us have talked about that make this complicated, though, because sometimes what the government really needs to do is make a little upfront investment say in program management or program evaluation to figure out what really works and what doesn't. But the program managers are under so much pressure to cut, they can't even consider that, even though it would save the government money in the long run. So you can see all kinds of dynamics depending on the sector, and you can see particularly IT sector, how that might play.
Right, and we'll, Cameron, we do have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about the IT sector, and Bill, we're going to talk about LPTA and strategic sourcing. My guests, Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst from Bloomberg Government, and Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst from Bloomberg Government, and Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group. And Cameron, you started to mention, you know, the IT sector in particular when we did take our break. So I'll let you pick up there.
So, you know, it's interesting. The government history of procurement of IT is not a very pretty one.
You don't say.
Yeah, really. Every major IT program over budget, behind schedule, and so on and so forth, and you know, performance issues as well. One of the things that the government, though, has learned in this process is they've learned that smaller is better. Breaking IT projects into smaller pieces makes a lot of sense. It reduces the risk, and I think it probably helps with the government tendency to be overly prescriptive in the RFP, which ties the hands of the software developers, the hardware folks, the systems-oriented architecture folks. So IT procurements have gotten smaller, and that's definitely a pattern that's well-established now, and I think it's going to continue into the future. But in a constrained budget environment, you can also see how that plays well where you can do the build-test-build approach. Modular development,
right.
Modification of COT systems rather than a full-blown de novo development. And part of that makes sense because of the rapid change of technology. Government procurement system is slow. Technological development is fast. So if you try and do something too big, you're going to end up locking in technology that's out of date by the time you get it into the field.
Right. And Cameron, I'm very familiar with that. We did that, you know, in the early 90s, year after year. Let's do this. Take 2 years to award a contract, and everything that was the award was based on is already obsolete. So, and what you talk about too is consistent with OMB's 25-point plan. We're basically saying it's being implemented.
Yeah,
and it's being, but it's not just a technological or program management imperative. It's also a fiscal imperative that they take that approach.
Yeah, sometimes you need the budget stick to make the policy.
Stick.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Thanks, Bill.
If you don't mind, let's take this a little different way, but having the same kind of the same area. But when you and to listening to Cameron talk about the approach of buying and how much of a commitment does the government make, or how descriptive is the government what they're going after, and then you bring in LPTA, Roger, and then so while. I think on LPTA, you have to be very descriptive as to what you want and lock in on it, because that's the only way you're going to get an actual good response to a government requirement. But I think once you get into the IT area, in particular professional services, if you're looking to bring on professional services to go to a low price technically acceptable, you know, it's like you don't know what you don't know. You're going to get, you know, what you pay for. And I think the government, at least I would hope, the government and what they expect to get under it, should they go low price technically acceptable in services, you know, they're going to want to get what they need done. But the key is you're really influencing the balance sheet of a company. You're forcing that company to have to pay and bring in a qualified level that's going to make them be able to win the award, and the profit margins are not really going to be there for some really good, talented people. And I think that's who the government wants. And I think we lose sight of you know, we all know people have different productivity rates. So you may pay a little bit more for a higher productivity that really can be a 2-for-1 savings, but you're paying sure. a little more. And I'm not seeing any recognition of that from a policy standpoint. Everybody's running to the bottom line, and on the as I say, from an academia standpoint or on the chalkboard, everything works. So when you're trying to cut so much or trying to have cost avoidance in government is basically what we're talking about here, I think we're really not recognizing. I mean, I think everybody's recognizing the budget crisis or the budget attention that's being given here. But I think within that attention or within the budget, the existing budget, I think we just have to be overall smarter on how we acquire what we need for government. And I think, you know, when, I know Cameron's kind of, I think, joking a little bit about using this the stick here to get policy, but to have policy stick. But the key is on that, I don't know, maybe somebody's got a call-in question. And so the, just kidding. And so the, in this area, LPTA, I think, can really cost the government more money. And I think that's not being considered. I'm not saying on 100% it's going to cost the government more money, but when you start into professional services, there's a reason that people are going to have different rates for category different for the same category of services, but it's the talent of people that they're bringing in. And I think it would be a shame for the government not to recognize that more clear than they are today.
Well, what you're saying, Bill, is that, you know, the long-term implications, you know, for government and government performance are significant, because if you do, you know, shortchange, you know, people you're hiring to help you figure out where you need to take the program, how to fix the program, or what the vision should look like in the future, if you go in low price technically acceptable, you know, that vision might be pretty darn blurry, right? And that affects long-term performance of government, and it affects long-term interests of the American people, American taxpayers.
There's also a practical implication. To be fair to the government, there are, you can't sort of paint with a broad brush. There are agencies and program managers within the government who've begun to realize that if you go strictly low price, technically acceptable, in every instance, you're going to make mistakes. There are times where it's perfectly appropriate, where it's a commoditized service and you know that there's a high degree of competition. There's nothing wrong with low price technically acceptable, but there are other circumstances where it's not appropriate. Same with fixed price. Sometimes that makes total sense for the government. It's a risk mitigator for the government, and you'll get plenty of bids on the work. But where the sort of rubber meets the road, the conflict between low cost and one of the other goals of the government is more competition. And some program managers and some agencies have seen that when they use low price technically acceptable in circumstances where it's less than optimal,
yeah,
they don't get very many bids. So they're hurting their own goal of increasing competition. And then they realize, we got to go back and rework this RFP.
Right.
So
right.
There is some learning of lessons going on out there.
Bill?
Yeah, I think in regards to LPTA, from an industry standpoint, you know, it's for anyone to sell to any market, you don't have it figured out. But when you kind of plop this down into a market that's been from a traditional standpoint, you know, full and open competition, and do a dramatic change on it, you know, I think that's what, you know, the market can handle that. I think where the market struggles is there's becoming for effect purposes, I'll say zero here, but there's kind of zero recognition of the solution itself. It's based on price, and so that's where it becomes difficult with industry to offer what would be a very unique and a very strategic solution to some of the government's needs here, particularly in the services area. The value of that of that solution is not getting really any recognition. It's, in other words, you meet, you know, you're meeting the minimum here. I mean, I actually saw one recently, and it's the first time I heard of this. So it's maybe that's a good thing. It means you're still alive or something. But yeah, but the award was based on low price, and normally you would say technically acceptable. This was low price, technically capable. And I'm like, I guess that means you're breathing. Right. I mean, that was not from a from an acquisition standpoint for me personally. That was, I was very sad to see that and to hear that, to technically capable. That means, you know, you hadn't even done it, but you're capable of doing it. Ah. Versus the people that you're competing with who have done it.
Who have the quals.
And have the quals. So, ah. I mean, that's a new low for me. And from an acquisition.
So to speak, right?
Yeah, that's like, I mean, that is like.
Pun intended.
Yeah, I know, right. But I mean, I think it's what this show's about. We want to have these discussions that, you know, this is, as I call it, kind of the, you know, market ground zero. I mean, this is what's happening, you know, from a relationship standpoint, and I would definitely encourage the government not to go low price, technically capable. You're going to open up more garage doors this way instead of dealing with bricks and mortar, and I think that's going to be very, very very costly for the government, short term and long term.
Right, that low price, technically capable company is that's everything. I think my daughter could start one of those.
Yeah,
right? She's a junior in high school.
She'd be a woman-owned business. She'd be good.
That'd right.
be good.
There you go. But right now we do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst from Bloomberg Group, and Bill Gormley from the Gormley Group, and we'll talk a little about companies and how they position themselves moving forward in this new federal market. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group and Cameron Luthy, of Senior Budget Analyst with Bloomberg Government. And we're talking the new federal marketplace and, you know, sequestration, fourth quarter, what's going on out there. And Bill, I mean, you're throwing out this new term. I haven't heard this one, but, you know, it's the federal market ground zero. So what is that? And, you know, what's going on?
Well, I think we reached ground zero earlier when we talked about low price technically capable. So I'm not going to go any further.
We can only go up from there.
I'm so
right?
distraught about that. But anyway, but I think we're kind of from ground zero. First off, you know, here we are, you know, at the end of July, and I, you know, my opinion is going to be interesting to see what Cameron has to say about this. And is I don't think the government does not have the resources, regardless of the year we've talked about, the ups and downs in the market, the budget, you know, constraints, the budget delays, the budget unknowns, and all of that's gone into it, kind of the mystery year of the budget. You know, at the end of the day, the government does have money to spend between now and the end of the year. And, you know, in talking to and being out there quite a bit lately, the government does not have the capability of spending what's remaining in the budget from an addressable market standpoint. Cameron, I don't know if that's your position or not, but this would be a good dialogue. Roger, if you don't mind, we can touch on this for a minute for the audience.
Oh, sure. Cameron?
Sure. So, you know, fourth quarter, traditionally, the federal government puts a lot of money on contract. This year is going to be no different in that regard. The challenge, as Bill's pointed out, is because of the delays in putting money on contract because of the budget shadow, if you will, are they going to have enough time and enough throughput capacity to put the money on contract before the end of the year and not have a lot of funds lapse? Now, historically, the Federal Acquisition Workforce has done yeoman work to make this happen, to prevent funds from lapsing, to do their job, work long hours. What's different? Well, not only do they have a lot more to put on contract in the fourth quarter, but they've also been hit by furloughs. So it's kind of like really unfair to the acquisition workforce. We're asking them to do more with less, and then, oh yeah, by the way, you got to, you know, you're laid off for a week or 2 weeks. And that's a really crummy set of circumstances. So, you know, history says they always find a way to get it done, but could this be the year where they don't? That's sort of the question that Bill's posed.
And I think, what was it, 31 days in September?
Yeah, I'm getting no, 30.
It's 30. Yeah, it's come right. on, man.
Oh, I thought maybe I read somewhere Congress trying to make it 31. Maybe it says to the Congress.
To give them an extra day to get the money on.
So Congress, that's the one thing Congress has been able to do.
They haven't been able to change the calendar.
Change the calendar. So I'm trying to make a point here.
But Bill, I know in some federal government procurement offices, there is an extra day. There is an extra day,
they've moved paydays.
Yeah. Yeah, they've done a lot. They've even moved physical years, and don't get me started. I think that budget's only been approved 5 times since 1949. So don't go there. Okay, so let's get back on the good stuff. You mentioned furlough. Just on the other side of that, you know, I was with the company earlier in the week, and there was some vacancies there, and I'm like, what's going on here? And they're like, well, what we do, we furlough our employees when their counterpart in government's furloughed. So this has a significant ripple effect that is sort of unseen. But then on the other hand, you're looking at it, okay, when those employees kind of come back, you know, to get that work out with the window closing every single day for September 30th, the end of the fiscal year here, there is not enough resources. I mean, I was talking to someone over at the GSA Assisted Acquisition Service where they provide contracting support for other agencies, and they're completely full. And then Roger, you had a very good meeting, I think it was last week, with Commissioner Tom Sharp, and his interest was, we want to grow the market, you know, from, I think, 12% to 17% or something. And yet they don't have the in fairness, they want to grow to market, but they don't, people are saying, why don't you get more resources? And so, you know, this is why planning becomes very, financial planning becomes essential into figuring a lot of this out. And the government, you know, we're not going to get to this level of discussion here, but, you know, without having a budget, a company cannot run very long and be successful. The government is really, pulling itself through some mud here that I don't know how long it's going to take to get out of this. But to Cameron's point, it all comes down to the 1102s, the contracting people, and regardless of how, you know, what IG or the GAO or whatever opinion or Congress is, at the end of the day, this is the gatekeeper. They're the only ones who can turn the key and get a contract. And there's only so many of those people. There's only so many hours. And when they get furloughed, and someone told me this morning, hey, Bill, have you driven by the Pentagon lately out there, Route 110? He says, you go on a Monday or a Friday, it looks like Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. And so there's a major impact out there. And so all of this is queuing up. So at the end of the day, the government, I'm going to get back to the statement, the government does not have the resources to spend the money that's left on the table. And it was dealt unfairly to the agencies by the lack of, I think, leadership in many ways.
Right. You know, one of the things that I think companies are doing, and they've got experience now with this, with the CRs being the new normal to start the year, they know that the fourth quarter is important for two reasons. One, to get money on contract, but it's also important for positioning for the first quarter of the new year, where there'll be a CR in place that puts severe limitations on new starts. And one of the ways that companies can navigate that, and it also makes it easier to execute and put money on contract in the fourth quarter, is to add task orders to existing multiple award contracts, because it's easy for the contracting shop to do.
Right. Yep.
And, I don't know about easy.
Well, it's easier than doing a new contract.
I'm just trying to give Rick. Right. I haven't been a former contracting officer. Come on now.
Fair point. And the scope of some of these multiple award contracts is quite broad. which means that you can issue a task order in the fourth quarter, which will allow the vendor to begin doing work in the first quarter of the new year and not be subject to the limitations of new starts. Or you can start a pilot in the fourth quarter if you've got leftover money you're worried about not getting on the, you know, then set you up for a follow-on task in the new year that's not doesn't constitute a new start. So you can see there are ways that the contracting community and the government can help each other in this set of circumstances.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, but this is not. You know, I'm trying to have a visual here, at least for me, maybe the audience. We're not on a factory floor where we can crank up the rheostat switch in doing contracts and task orders. There's only so much you can get out. I like your thought process of like, hey, let's be strategic and let's be, you know, very strategic in how we move forward with our workload. But so much work is getting thrown at these people from buying what we may think are ordinarily office supply needs to keep an office running versus in major systems or to get things out, which are large dollars. And so all of this has to go through procurement. And so, you know, maybe we need it'd probably be three generations from now, but maybe we need to start thinking about, is there a different way for government to handle this contracting process, Roger? Because there's more rules and regulations that are getting put on to this process. And it is not, and I think, you know, the coalition has been very vocal about, going more to the commercial contracting practice where the government is acquiring commercial products and services or solutions. So I think somehow we got to get this thing right sized as far as just from a regulatory standpoint, and that doesn't happen overnight, and we know that.
Right. And well, Bill, just back to the task order. I mean, what does it, and using task orders to get work started in the fourth quarter and, you know, just and the throughput issue that you've identified, what is government going to need to look to try to solve that? Is it pre-existing government-wide contracts or what?
Yeah, I think if you go to market ground zero within government, how's that? Because there's the market starts in government, right? Starts with the customer need. I think there is I'm not going to say throughout government, but I think there's a desperate need. We actually talked about training earlier, so this dawns on me. I think there's a desperate need for training of for people within government, not only within contracting, but outside for, you know, program management. Because the ability to prepare a statement of work, you know, contracting cannot prepare a statement of work. The customer has to be a part of that. And there's a team of different elements within a program that come together to describe, I think, as I would always call it, subscribe the objective. And my preference has always been to put the objective out there and have industry come back with a solution. And I think government's trying to be more prescriptive now, and I think that's what's limited. You know, to Cameron's earlier point, I think we're limiting the real capability of really moving government, you know, forward. But then when you get into the regulatory standpoint, you know, they're looking at how do we save money. And I think, you know, this is costing the government money.
Right. And on that note, Bill, we do have to take our last break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst from Bloomberg Government, and Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group. And we'll continue our sequestration talk. I definitely will give you guys an opportunity to talk about a little bit about strategic sourcing and what that means in this environment. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal. But federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group and Cameron Luthy, Senior Budget Analyst for Bloomberg Government. We've been talking the new federal market, or as Bill likes to call it, market ground zero. and in that regard, just talk a little bit. I'm going to start throwing out a few words here and get your reaction to them. But first, I wanted Cameron to ask you, can you give your thoughts on you know, what companies need to think about when they talk about their strategic direction for, you know, FY14, the first quarter. I mean, you mentioned the task order issue, but, you know, with the budget uncertainty, you know, what do you see like for M&A? Or, you know, we've heard folks are cutting people from Bill, you know, furlough, government furlough equals company furlough, contractor furlough. What are your thoughts?
So I took a look at company layoffs in the federal sector over the past 12 months, and another call in.
That's a popular show.
That's somebody looking for a job,
that's
I guess.
A popular show, that's right.
Yeah, unemployment rate is still 7 point whatever.
Okay, go ahead, Cameron.
So, you know, companies have been operating under a great deal of uncertainty from a budgetary standpoint, and that uncertainty isn't going to be cleared up on October 1. We're going to start the year under the CR. So companies, I think, are going to continue to hold back. When I looked at the pattern of layoffs, with the few exceptions in the defense arena related to land systems, ground vehicles,
sure,
the layoffs as a percentage of these companies' workforce was relatively modest. And a lot of it was cost-cutting, companies laying off more senior people, and not necessarily one-for-one, but substituting sometimes young people who are cheaper for the senior people who were laid off. Right. But in general, if you had to characterize these big companies who work in the federal space, their pattern of behavior is bet hedging. Wait and see.
Right.
And so whether it comes to whether you're talking about mergers, acquisitions, divestitures, hiring or layoff decisions, it's sort of moderated a little here, a little there. But wait and see. Well, I think. You know, this is just Cameron talking, but I think by Christmas we'll have clarity about the FY14 spending levels for federal agencies. I don't think we'll go all the way till March like we did this past year. And companies who want certainty about FY15, 16, 17, I'm sorry, the new ground zero is you're going to have to deal with uncertainty.
Right.
And if you think about it, companies who most of their business was with civilian agencies have had to deal with uncertainty about the future years for years.
That's
true. It's only defense where you had that greater certainty about the next 5 years so that you could plan a strategy accordingly. Well, I'm saying now even defense contractors are going to have to make their strategic plans without perfect knowledge about what the department's going to spend for the next 5 years.
Right. Do you see potential areas where there's going to be more opportunity? You know, for a contractor.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you think about, right, just we'll start with defense and big picture, data analytics, data center consolidation, cloud computing solutions for not, you know, routine business systems. When it comes to, you know, sort of bigger picture, obviously everybody talks about cyber. Modification to existing systems if they're going to buy fewer new, right? Aircraft
sure.
mods that are specific to the special operations community, for example. Unmanned systems, definite growth there. Satellites, it's a small sector, but it's a very expensive sector. A space launch that goes directly with the satellite sector. You know, the flip side of that is where there is going to be greater vulnerability. Everybody knows that the Army's going to be smaller, the Marine Corps is going to be smaller, ground systems, they're not going to buy
as many.
And there's a ripple effect. If you have fewer in the fleet, what does that do to depot maintenance?
Sure.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we get to the services side too.
Right.
So, you know, when you move over to the civilian sector, obviously some of those IT solutions that I talked about for the Defense Department are equally applicable. Data center consolidation, we all know DHS has led the way, but there's plenty of room for more of that.
Sure. Okay, so thanks. That's great. And now I want to do some sort of wordplay. I'm going to throw out a word, you know, some procurement phrases and get your guys' take on it first.
Okay. Just don't throw out capable, okay?
Okay. No, I think you guys are capable of answering these
thanks.
Questions, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So... But you've demonstrated it before.
That's right. Yeah.
There's
here
a
we
difference
go.
There.
Here we go.
Okay. So, okay. First, strategic sourcing. Bill?
It's clearly a method for any business, government, or commercial. So it's a term that's not unfamiliar. I think some of the applications, you know, I think could be handled differently. I think you know me well enough, Roger, is I think the schedules and of themselves is our strategic sourcing contract vehicles that GSA has set up. And I think the agencies are more than capable of getting good deals off them. They need to get trained and maybe going to get educated on how to use the vehicles. But I think as I understand it, like I've heard anyway, one of the new hires at OMB came from Walmart, so they're trying to use some of the Walmart strategies or rationale. Like, you know, no one gets a better deal than Walmart, supposedly. I think I heard it at a hearing last week or the week before, and I thought through that. And again, all of these sound bites are interesting, but when you step back from it, you know, you don't see a Walmart to bomb at a Grand Canyon. And right. So there's a strategic reason Walmart puts its stores in locations that they have done research on and know the locations and where to put them. The government covers the Grand Canyon all the way, you know, to the universe and the moon. And so there's strategic sourcing does not have the broadest is used in a very broad application for a very narrow application within the industry.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. You talk about sound bites, the thing that sort of always I get a chuckle out as you hear, you know, people talk, well, you know, we need to buy like we're the biggest buyer in the world, not by like seven mid-sized companies. Well, sorry, hello. The government is seven mid-sized companies. Or, you know, there's different buying patterns, different requirements, different missions. Yeah. I wouldn't want my government to be a uniform monolith, you know, buying all the same way, because they have different missions and their procurements need to be tailored to those missions. And I think, you know, with regard to strategic, that's getting lost.
Yep.
Cameron, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think there's a time and place, right? So you say strategic sourcing and Bill talks about, you know, government-wide vehicles. There's a time and place. It depends on what you're buying. There's some things where it makes perfect sense and others where the unique nature of the agency mission mitigate or militates.
And the marketplace, Cameron. I mean, there's some areas where it may make sense, like overnight delivery. There's a very small number of companies in that market,
you're,
right?
You're not going to affect competition that much. The government's not going to move the needle in that market.
Yeah,
big difference between buying paper and overnight delivery.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next word, contract duplication. Bill, you can go first, too, or Cameron, whichever.
I'll take
Just don't duplicate each other.
Never.
So, you know, one of the things that the OFPP has said is that there are too many multiple award contract vehicles out there, and they would like to rationalize that. And again, that's one of those things that sounds nice, but they've not made a whole lot of headway. There are lots of vehicles out there with no activity on them that haven't gone away. There are vehicles out there where that are duplicative, but agencies have this sort of turfy proprietary attachment to their vehicle. This is mine. I want everything to be done on my vehicle,
and unique
empire building, and you know that kind of behavior. And to a certain degree, that's human nature. It's pretty hard to overcome.
Right. It's a balance, right? You have a unique mission, but these contracts are structured to be able to allow you to identify your requirements and place them on those contracts. Bill?
I'm going to try not to duplicate what Cameron said. So but I will talk about, I think, Tom Sharp, I think, has a compelling position on the capability of GSA and outside of GSA, new customers coming in or old customers coming back, however you want to categorize it, they're trying to grow their market share. It's actually a business term, grow market share. So this is kind of a nice little ring to it. Now we'll see how far that goes as far as acting like the market. But I think from an OFPP standpoint, I think OFPP should stand up and go beyond the soundbite to actually putting something out similar to what DOD did in two decades ago, when they pretty much said, you know, go ahead and use GSA, use established source of supply, don't recreate. And that had a significant impact. So I think OFPP, Joe Jordan here, has a phenomenal opportunity to really establish a business approach within government. He's from the private sector, you know. He touts that he wants to use that experience, and there's no company in the private sector would tolerate the amount of duplication that the government has, and it's all low hanging fruit.
Right. So okay, I'm going to let you guys
OFPP memo. Go to GSA, reduce contract sourcing.
Okay. And hey, with that, we do have to end the show.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry. God. I mean, we could come back and do another one.
Yeah, well, we might have to do that.
Right. We'll try the first quarter of next year, like somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's September. We'll come back September 31st.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Okay. Troublemaker.
Right. That could be September 31st, all the remainder of 2013, right? Yeah. At that point. So. But I want to thank my guests, Cameron Luthi, Senior Budget Analyst, Bloomberg Government, and Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.